Today's podcast is brought to you by the Herzog Foundation. Well, she's a mother of three and a proud Indiana Hoosier. She also represents Indiana in the United States Congress. Representative Erin Houchin joins us today to talk about mixing motherhood and public service. Stay with us. This is the Moms for America podcast. Each week, leaders and everyday champions tell personal stories, share advice, and tackle the issues most important to moms. Hi, moms. I'm Debbie Kurletis, your host, and welcome to the Moms for America podcast. So glad that you moms are joining us again today. We got a great show coming up. All right. Every week we get together to inspire, encourage, and educate moms in their journey through motherhood. Well, today's program, here we go. U.S. Representative Erin Houchin is a native of Indiana who has served her state in a variety of roles. She's a mother, she's a community leader, and she's a small business owner. She currently is serving her second term as a U.S. representative from Indiana's 9th District. She's also the second highest ranking woman in the House. How about that? Balancing motherhood with a career is a challenge for all women. But when your job means you're battling for your constituents and your conservative policy, that can add a whole new level of stress. Well, welcome, Representative. We're so glad to have you. I know you are moving a lot there today in D.C., so thank you for running downstairs right to your office to talk with Moms for America.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
All right, let's talk real quick. We've got so much to chat about being at the house, being in DC, being a mom. Tell us a little bit about the kids. Family first. I know that's of utmost importance to you. And then we're going to talk about how you're balancing it all. But tell us about your tribe.
Sure. My husband and I have been married almost 24 years. It'll be 24 years this fall. We have a 22-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 16-year-old, two daughters, and then our son, who's still in high school. My husband and I met as interns at the State House in Indianapolis. I went on to serve as a state senator, and before that had run his campaign for county prosecutor when my daughters were 2 years old and a newborn, and my son wasn't born yet. So we've been a very political family from the start, which to get to your question about balance, I think that certainly has helped us with the kids and their understanding of our service and the time that it takes away.
Wow. Well, that's quite a lineup. I've run for office myself a couple of times, but trustee and county board, not quite representative, and then out to D.C. So that was a bit of a jump for you, leaving. You're in the Midwest, right? Indiana. And now you're in D.C. But being a Midwest gal, being from Indiana and being basically in your state serving, what was that like? And being there as a representative. And then we're going to talk a little bit about your journey to DC.
Sure. It was great to serve the state in the state Senate. I actually was the first female who had been an intern to come back and serve as a senator after being an intern. Before me, there was only one other intern that came back to serve as a senator, but there have been more since then, which I'm glad to see. But it was, I was working at that time for our U.S. Senator, Dan Coats, as his regional representative in the state of Indiana, serving as a representative for constituents on federal issues on his behalf. Right. Which made me believe that I could probably have an impact as a state senator on behalf of the community, which is why I ran for office. But it wasn't an easy decision because of the ages of the kids. I think, when I was a stay-at-home mom for about 5 years. When I went back to work for Senator Coats, my son was just 2 years old, and I really thought I would be home with him until he went to kindergarten. Right. And it was a tough decision, but the right one. It is very difficult to balance. But as I said before, we're actually in Southern Indiana, where both of our parents have been. They've been a big help to us as we've been in service. My mom still today is helpful at staying overnight with my 16-year-old son to keep him out of trouble. So,
well, that's true, because it does take family. You need help. you need help. So that was really your key at kind of holding your home together when you went back to work. Because two's little. When you got a
Yeah,
toddler,
very
that's,
little.
you know, so if you've got grandma there and you've got, you know, family supporting you, that's what made it easier for you to do that.
Yeah, when the senator, you know, when I was actually, we go back a little bit beyond that. I was a stay-at-home mom. I had worked in child services, but was home with the kids for about 5 years. And during that time, I got my master's degree in political management from the George Washington University online. I would put the kids to bed at 9 o'clock and study until 3 in the morning, and then get up and be a stay-at-home mom the next day. That was about a 2, 2.5 year program. And during that time, I ran for
Nice.
district chairperson for the Indiana Republican Party. So I served. I ran for this office. I was 9 months pregnant with my son, my third child. I got elected to that position on a Saturday, and I gave birth the next month, like that very 2 days later on Monday. That
That's what
was
moms do,
That's what we
right?
do, right? I had people saying, like, "Are you sure you can do this?" I'm like, "Well, we're doing it. So whether we can or we can't, we're doing it."
It's so
And
funny.
so that's been, you know, I was compelled. I think after, for me, what drove me to do that was that we had seen Barack Obama get elected president during that
Yeah,
time.
sure.
I remember looking at my two daughters playing on their swing set and thinking, "The world has just changed for your
Right.
future,"
What will
and it
America
was
be?
not settling well with me. The Republican Party nationally was kind of in turmoil. People were telling us we'd never see conservatives get elected again. This was a change
It was so
election.
doom and gloom, wasn't it?
Yes. And I thought, I'm not okay with that, which is why I was compelled to get involved in party politics to a higher level at that time. People told me things like, "You should be home with your kids. You should wait your turn. Who's going to take care of, you know, your family?" And those are all very important things. And
Right.
yes, moms are so important for their households. I always tell moms who are thinking about running for office that you're going to miss your kids more than they're probably going to miss you. You're going to feel like you need them probably more than they need you. But it is important to be there for your families. But you
Yeah.
can do both. It is possible to do both, which we have been doing. And you know, the kids are doing great. But during that time, it was like, that was compelling, so we did it. That's what led me to work for Senator Coates, which was what led me to run for the state Senate, which is what led me to Congress. So it was that service. When I was growing up, my dad was a dentist. He told me, "Aaron, you can be anything you want to be. The sky's the limit for you. You're very talented. You can do anything you want. Don't be a dentist." But he did love
That's pretty
his, he
funny.
loved serving the community, and he loved his patients, and he didn't love the practice of dentistry. When he passed away in 2019 at the funeral, and the, you know, when people were walking through the receiving line, they said, "I just loved your dad." And that had an impact, because who loves their dentist? I loved my dad, but most
Everybody
people don't
hates
love
going
their
to the
dentist.
dentist, right? Yeah.
But I think that's where I got this feeling that it was, you know, my responsibility. If I am capable and I can do this for my state, my community, my country, I should.
Yeah. Well, a beautiful wrap up here, leading us to, I should say, your journey to Congress. But before that, I did want to kind of talk a little bit about motherhood and how it's kind of been, it's been tough for women. I'm just curious your take on all this, because you've done a nice job describing it a little bit so far. It's been tough for moms to figure out when to go back to work. If they go back to work, is it a calling? Is it a luxury? Is it a necessity? Where do your kids fit into that? Because motherhood, number one, is the most important role for us as a mother, right? To teach and train and take good care of our children. So I think sometimes there's guilt when moms go back to work. People say things like this to you, like, you know, you should be home with your kids. Or you just decide to, like, you know, I interviewed Susie Wiles, you know, last month or month after that. And she said, listen, I took 11 years off from my career to be a mom.
Yep.
And it's probably not what anyone should do if you're thinking career, but I came back and, now she's like the most powerful woman in the world. So it's like there is this balance and you do have to pray through it. You do have to consider so much, but just your words to moms that are kind of trying to figure this out.
Sure. For me, I felt compelled. So it was definitely prayerful. I especially when I ran for Congress the first time and I was unsuccessful. And then came back and ran again and was successful. But I remember at the time my preacher gave me a printout of a Bible verse that I will paraphrase. It's like, God doesn't always put you where you want to be, but sends you where you need to go. And that really, I had perfect peace going into that election, knowing that it wasn't really up to me anyway, that I was going to be doing what I was supposed to be doing. And so if you lean into that, then you will know what the right time is. I think I certainly was the case for me. I had complete peace no matter what happened in that election. And I was then able to stay home with the kids for a little bit longer. As a legislator, I would drive to Indianapolis and back every single day, 2 hours up, 2 hours back, so that my rule of thumb in the service that was, could I see them before they went to sleep or see them in the morning before they went to school? And if either of those two things could happen, I would not stay overnight in Indianapolis. I would drive home. And that was how we made it work. But we also would have family meetings on Sundays because my husband and I were both in elected office. So we would have these family meetings where we would run it by Robert's Rules of Order, and the kids could bring things to the table that they wanted to, propose to us. And we would have full veto power, of course, over getting a puppy or some other added responsibility. But we took that even to the extreme of when I ran for Congress the second time, we had a family meeting about whether that was the right decision. And my kids were 18 and 16 and 13 when I got elected to Congress. I will say right before I came into the podcast, I was talking to my daughter, who's a sophomore in college. She calls me throughout the day. My son, less so, the 16-year-old, he wants his autonomy, which I totally get. But when we talked to the kids about running for Congress the second time, my 18-year-old was like, I think this could be good for opportunities. And she was really eager. She's very political herself. So she was great. My 16-year-old was like on her phone, distracted, like, yeah, mom, whatever you say. Can I go hang out with my friends now? That sounds great. Whatever you want. And my son, who was 13 at the time, just looked at me and said, are you going to make more money?
Oh
And I
boy.
said, no, I am not.
Yeah,
No, I am
that's
not.
not
It's not that, but we will hopefully make a
make a
difference
difference.
for people. And he said, I guess that's okay. And I said, this means I won't be able to come to your track meets as often, and I might miss some of your band contests or your performances. And he's like, that's okay. It really makes me too nervous when you're there anyway.
Oh, wow.
So,
That's funny.
to each his own in how you decide that you're going to serve. But we've always told the kids that our service and their sacrifice is part of their service to the
Yeah.
country and to the state,
I
and
was
they
just
are
going to
part
say
of it
that.
too. And that has really, I think, helped ground the whole family in this idea that there are sacrifices that they're making on behalf of the state and the country too. The hardest thing right
Yeah,
now
it's.
is the danger that's out there, and it's clear and present for all elected officials and their families, but particularly for members of Congress, that we've seen an increase in disturbing behavior and dangerous behavior, and that's what is keeping me up at night as a mom in this type of service, because we are doing this voluntarily, and the
Right.
kids don't necessarily ask for that, but they are part
Right.
of it. They've handled it very well, and through some difficult times in election years when kids and adults can get a little bit, I
Yeah.
would say, not very
Nasty,
nice.
basically. Yeah. Nasty.
The kids have handled it really well, and we have this open dialogue that we've asked them to have with us. So, we have found a way to make it work. Debbie, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to do it and to set an example, not just for my own daughters, but for other young women, that this is possible. And follow your heart and follow where God intends you to go and pray into that. And I think you'll find the right time.
All right, moms, we'll continue our discussion with Representative Houchin right after this short break. Stay with us. Hi, moms. I'm excited to share some news about our new sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. We know you're passionate about raising patriots and empowering your children with the best education possible. And the Herzog Foundation shares that passion. They're dedicated to promoting liberty through education freedom and helping parents like you choose the best educational path. They offer a powerhouse of resources designed to support families and schools alike. Whether you're ready to dive in headfirst to the world of education or simply looking for more ways to empower your child's learning. From free training events to their must-read online publication, The Lion, they're committed to keeping you informed about what's happening in education. Also, if you've ever thought, moms, about starting your own Christian school or co-op, their School Box online course will give you everything you need to get started on the right foot. Again, we are so proud to partner with the Herzog Foundation, and we encourage you to explore all their amazing tools and the insights that they offer. So go ahead, visit herzogfoundation.com to learn more. You won't want to miss these incredible resources. Again, find it all out at herzogfoundation.com. All right. Well, welcome back, moms. Before we continue with our interview, I do want to remind everyone here, would you please like, share, subscribe, rate, all that fun stuff that they ask you to do from YouTube to Instagram, Facebook, X, all that stuff. Please share this with your mom friends. This is how we get our podcast out and about and share all of the great guests that we have. Also, if you have an idea or a topic for the podcast, would you please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net. I would love to hear from you. Lastly, I want to invite all of our moms that are listening to join our movement here at Moms for America. I surely hope that you joined already. If you haven't, you just go to momsforamerica.us and sign up. Also, we have this incredible new platform for our members, which is called Momstown Square. So please check us out in all of our resources and information there. It's moms like us uniting all across the country, and we're fighting for faith, we're fighting for family, we're fighting for freedom and the Constitution. Again, please join the movement. Check us out at momsforamerica.us. And now back to the show. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the legislation and parental rights. I mean, as far as Moms for America, it's the number one thing everybody comes to. Parental rights. Somebody is messing with our parental rights. Nobody messes with Mama Bear. Nobody tries to harm or take away or replace. They don't cross that line. This is mom's territory and dad's territory. So parental rights is something I know that is very important to you, and you're working on some important legislation. Tell us about that atmosphere in Washington, D.C. It was poo-pooed for, you know, under the Biden administration, now under, thank goodness, the Trump administration, it's parents matter again. Thank God, right?
One of the most shocking things to me, really, on the issue of parental rights was when schools were, you know, using a different name for a child, or, right. You know, there's a transgender issue and the parents were not notified. But I also had a parental rights issue when I was in the state of Indiana. This was long before the Dobbs decision, when we were still in this pro-life movement, trying to limit abortion as sure. much as possible. And in Indiana, if you were underage, you could go to Planned Parenthood and you could tell them that you can't tell your parents about the pregnancy, and they could take you to court and get an injunction for you to have a an abortion without your parents' knowledge or consent. Yeah. And, you know, people might pretend to be a parent and going into the clinic to get young girls to have an abortion. And that disturbed me. I thought, with my own daughters, I couldn't imagine them having to go through something like that and me not knowing about it and not having any say in it whatsoever. So we had a bill that required parental consent and notification. So if they did show up to court, parents had to be notified that their child was trying to go around the parental.
Can you imagine this could be a 14-year-old that has been trafficked or raped or anything? Yes. Of course, I mean, people think like, oh, let's be sympathetic. What if the parents are difficult? This is not the situation, because you can always go to any kind of family member and all that. I mean, this is the place where the most abuse can happen, is a young girl, 13, 14, 15-year-olds without parental involvement, being pregnant and going and making a life-altering decision to take a life. And God knows how that affects her on all stages, let alone that poor baby, right?
Yeah, and the left at the time, they were adamantly opposed to the bill, obviously. And I remember I was testifying on behalf of my bill, and the Democrats made me go through a 65-page bill and defend every single line in the bill, with Planned Parenthood sitting behind me. They were scoffing and
Wow.
laughing at me. And I remember feeling an overwhelming feeling of peace during this process. And when I walked out of that committee hearing, there were three ladies that were standing outside, and they said, "We were praying for you." And I felt it. It was very powerful. But those are the kinds of crazy things that the left has been doing.
Yeah.
They really think that the government knows best when it comes to what's happening in our schools and
Yeah.
what kids are being taught. We learned during COVID that all of these horrible things that were being taught to our kids, and we had no say. And when parents tried to intervene, they were shut out of the school and shut out of having the information. So we did the Students' Bill of Rights and the Parents' Bill of Rights, which gave parents more say. This current parental consent issue comes down to the social media platforms. I've got the Kids Online Safety Act,
Yes.
and the with their we're working on a it's called the Reset Act. It sets a 16-year-old standard. We also have Parents Over Platforms, which is I'm working on with a Democrat, Jake Auchincloss, and that is the App Store level consent. Because I'll tell you, when my daughter was 13, and this is a warning to parents,
Yeah.
she hacked around our parental controls, got Instagram, was messaging who she thought were 13 and 14-year-old boys around the world, and staying up all night on her phone, and we had no idea. We had
Oh,
tried, we thought we had
no.
done everything right. When I discovered there was a behavior pattern change with her, that's when I started digging in, and there's nothing that would have indicated that any of that was going on, except that there was that one behavior that when she started the change in behavior.
Which
When
is
did,
mom's intuition, which you always move on and you move on quickly. I had a friend, same kind of a similar situation. I'm like, you got to move immediately, quickly, get ahead of it, stop it. Because if you pause, you wait 2, 3 weeks or
Don't
a
second
month,
guess.
my gosh, anything could happen.
Don't second
So
guess
good for you,
yourself.
mom. You got right in there and you found out what the problem was. And all of us that have kids have had similar situations at some level of
But I
this
have
where
to
the
tell
kids get
you,
away.
when we contacted the platform, we were told, now she was 13. We were told, she's 13, she's legally able to have the account. You cannot have it deleted, only she can. So there was
Amazing.
no way to protect her from that. We ended up taking away all of her devices and sort of locking her down for that summer. But if it hadn't been in the summertime and she had access to her friends' devices at school, this would have continued, and we couldn't have done anything at all to stop it. So I'm adamant that kids under the age of 16 should not have access to social media. We've been working with Jonathan Haidt at
Good for you.
the Anxious Generation, trying to get the word out. The chatbots on AI is another place where there could be some parental infringement, especially if kids can get access to these apps and you as parents can't have a say over it.
Can you comment on that AI with the chat box? Because this is a new territory. AI is terrifying and helpful all at the same time, but boy, do we have to figure that out. What do you mean the chat box with AI?
So there's AI chatbots now, and they can pretend to be therapists, doctors, companions, friends. And we've seen scenarios where these chatbots actually talk kids into self-harm.
Oh, yes,
So
yes, yes.
we have, and for adults, it's also the same that the kids don't understand that it's not a real person on the other side of
So
the
you're
chat
saying when you're
window.
talking to ChatGPT, Jet, am I saying that right now? I've got the
Yeah, there's ChatGPT, but
chat.
there's also just pure companion chat groups. It's not just let me ask AI a question. There are
Right.
chatbots that want to act as your friend.
Yes, and they counsel you and they say, "Oh no, that's okay." And we've heard crazy stories that like people are actually falling in love with their chatbots and all this stuff, and they've got assistants at the schools, and it's their personal friend that helps organize, and it sounds good, but it's got so many problems attached with it, which is your
Absolutely.
point.
Yes, which is why we've got the Safe Bots Act, And we have the Aware Act. So the Aware Act is education for parents, for teachers, for children about the dangers of chatbots. And then the Safe Bots Act, it requires the platforms, if they're going to offer a chat feature, that it cannot act as a doctor or a therapist, and that the chat actually has to direct them every hour, that it's not a real person. It can't provide that type of advice, and that if there is self-harm detected, it will have to refer them either to a real person or to resources to get help. And we
Well,
have to
this is
set these
something Moms
strict
for America
guidelines.
will love to get behind with you.
Thank you. That would be very helpful. It's been a struggle. I mean, we do have some of the social media companies, they're not eager to have any of that limited, but it's just too important, and we cannot just lose our kids to AI, to the internet, to technology. We're already seeing it with kids being on their phones all the time instead of being in the outdoors, and this is just another layer of that that parents should be aware of. If you haven't read, and I'm giving a plug for the Anxious Generation, if you haven't read it as a parent of a kid that a child that's going to be a teen and preteen soon, you should pick it up. It's a scary place out there. AI can be wonderful. It can help us a lot. Social media can be wonderful, but for children under the age of 16, they're just not ready for that type of technology. And we wouldn't turn our 11 or 12 year olds out into the world, into a foreign country, but yet we are doing that online every single day.
Yeah, I had my son no social media until 18, actually.
But
So,
that would
but
be
it,
preferable.
yeah, but that was, that was 3 years ago. It's so aggressive. I mean, every year the battles get bigger, and and my kids are 27 and 25, and it was a whole different, ball game. It wasn't what it was today. So it's like every year I go to these moms, boy, you really got to figure out what you're doing and when and how. And are you
Absolutely.
going to, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because it becomes a big factor in the home, as you're mentioning. So thank you for your legislation that you're championing. Thank you. Let us know how Moms for America can help. Is it as divided, just a little bit of behind the scenes there in DC? Is this as divided as we hear? What's it like? It's been now a year with President Trump or so. What's the atmosphere like? Are we hopeful? 250 years we're
Pretty
celebrating
good.
now.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for America 250. It's been a really great first year under President Trump's leadership. It isn't as divisive as the media portrays. We do, like, I'm working on several bills with Democrats that, when it's a good
Fabulous, yeah.
policy, it supersedes politics. You can work together. I will say it's more contentious now under the Trump presidency than it was under the Biden presidency. There's a lot more consternation, and the sides tend to get a little bit more divided, but it's not nearly as bad as what the media would portray. Jake Auchincloss, for instance, is a Democrat from Massachusetts, and he and I are co-chairing the Kids Online Safety Caucus, and we're working together not just on the AI bills, but the social media app store bills, where we're trying to keep kids under the age of 16 from having access to those. That's been a really great working relationship, and something that I hope that the American people will see, that there are things that we can work together on. There are certain things that the Democrats are absolutely ridiculous on, that we're not going to work together with them, like
There's no
the
common ground,
There's
maybe.
some of these issues where we are going to be firm, but when we can work together, when we can find a way to achieve great things on behalf of the American people together, that's a good thing, and we should encourage it, and we should support that.
Yeah.
I do want to
Listen,
say,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I couldn't do any of this without my husband.
Oh, we, yeah, I know those husbands.
Yeah.
And it really is, it's both too. I'm sure he says, you can do it without you, because he's busy in Indiana, right?
Yeah, it's very hard. He can't be out here with me. He's at home, and it's been a we've been in this business for a long, long time, and I think we both the iron, we sharpen each other. But I could not do this without his
Yeah.
support, and that of my family, and that matters too when you're trying to do these jobs.
Yeah. to be away from home, your home state, and serving and, kind of maybe doing a lot of FaceTime instead of being there. But I know God's called you, and thank you for your service. Thank you to your family and your hubby and all that, because we need more people like you. We need more moms that are a voice of truth and hope and fighting for America's freedom. Some closing words of advice maybe to our moms that are listening. I think you're seeing things differently because you're looking at legislation in helping to make America, for lack of a better term, great again, America first. And those policies are so important, and they trickle down to every corner, into every home in every state, not just in Indiana, Illinois, everyone there, our moms are. And what would you say to them about what you're seeing and what you're hoping for?
Yeah, I'm hopeful. And I always tell women in particular, we always feel like we have to know everything about everything before we take a step into doing something like this or taking on a new responsibility. And men will often take those steps and say, I'll figure it out. So I usually tell women, you don't have to know everything. Take the step. If you feel like you're being pulled to do it, do it. And even in the times where I've made a wrong decision, it's a step that I've learned something from. So you're going to learn something from it, even if it's maybe not the right thing, you'll know that. But take the step. To men, I say, women, you don't have to know everything, but men, you do have to know something. So try to learn a little bit before you take those leaps. But this is it's a fascinating time to be in Congress.
It is. Can you imagine you're serving there for America's 250th under President Trump? That is probably going to, he's doing what he said he was going to do. He
Totally
sure is.
unbelievable to be here in this moment. And he is doing exactly what he said he was going to do, what 77 million Americans elected him to do. And it's been a great joy to be here during this time. On policy for moms, we often have a whole different perspective on how we're going to approach legislation and how we solve problems and what we think about in those times. And so it is important for women and moms to be in serving in these roles to give that voice. Our dads are great too, and we need them, but
Absolutely.
moms bring a different policy perspective on many things. For me, it was coming to policy as a mom of a student with disabilities, and coming from that angle, you're right. Moms will tackle this issue on behalf of kids, not just their kids, but everybody's kids, so they don't have to see
Sure
other kids
do.
go through it. And that's a special thing that we could use more of here.
Yeah. And for moms to be involved in their community and in their schools and in their churches and in their, moms make a difference. We say when moms rise, the country is better because they do. They bring that aspect of nurturing and teaching, and they're tenacious. If you mess with their kids, or if you, if something's not settling with them, they'll try to right it, correct it, and make a difference. So thank you so much, Representative. We appreciate you serving. And I know you're going to run back upstairs. You got votes waiting for you at the House. And I hope to meet you in person in Washington, D.C. one of these times.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you. We love Moms for America. Thanks for all you do.
Alrighty, thanks again, Erin. We so appreciate you joining us. And the best of luck in those November elections that'll be coming up. We need more mamas like you in Washington. All right. And to you, moms, thank you for being a part of today's podcast. Again, for more information, check us out at Moms for America, all of our amazing programs and resources, and all the support that's there to help you as a mom. So please go to momsforamerica.us. And I say this every week, it's from parental rights to public policy, from the kitchen table to Congress. Moms for America has it all. We even say from the House to the White House. So we are the ultimate support group. We're here for you, moms. Please check us out. And as always, you as a mama, let's keep changing our country one home at a time. God bless, and I'll see you next week. A special thank you to our sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Herzog Foundation.